going to be starting now in good British fashion, on time. What a beautiful day. Just for those of you who are not in London all the time, this is not normally the case. So I'm very impressed with the attendance. You're very brave to be here with such a beautiful weather outside. But I'm very, very happy to welcome you all, our friends, colleagues, students. I see some of my students, some of my colleagues as well, and it's fantastic to have you here, people from the embassy. My name is Dr. Álvaro Méndez, and I'm the co-founder of the Global South Unit, which is based in the International Relations Department. I'm also a senior lecturer in international relations at Regent's University, and also a senior research fellow here at the LSE. I'm very, very happy to have you here. We have a quite full summer of activities. Today alone, we're competing with four other activities, four other public lectures. So this is actually a very impressive level of attendance. Equally, we will have a very full summer of activities. I'll be teaching, of course, summer school. But we will be launching our new Latin American China program this summer as well. And on the 13th of July, we will be having a professor from Rio de Janeiro speaking about China and Brazil and the extractive sector. So please follow our website. On the 23rd of July, we will have a professor from the University of Pacifico in Peru who will be talking about China and Peru, or Peru and China. So quite full schedule. I'm very pleased to be here to welcome our guests, of course, to the LSE today. We're very happy to have you here. And I'm going to introduce you, both of you, in alphabetical order, not in order of importance. Very, 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 very diplomatic. First, Luis Alberto Arce Catacora, Bolivia's Minister of Economy and Public Finances. And secondly, Minister René Orellana Halquier, Bolivia's Minister of Development and Planning. Starting with Minister Luis Alberto Arce Catacora, I would like to tell you that he is the head of the Ministry of Economy and Public Finances of Bolivia. He has been in this post for the last 10 consecutive years, since the beginning of President Evo Morales' government in Bolivia. Minister Arce holds a bachelor's degree in economics, which he obtained at the University Mayor of San Andres in La Paz, and he also received an MSc in economic sciences from Warwick here in the UK, where he lived in between 1996 and 1997. So you know that this is normally not the weather in the UK. Minister Arce will be explaining the key economic policies of the productive communitarian social economic model that has been applied to Bolivia since 2006, which led the country to experience one of its most successful and sustained cycles of economic growth and to successfully navigate the current regional recession. As you know, Latin America is disaccelerating. He will put emphasis on the importance of public investment in the most vulnerable sectors of society for inclusive development. After 20 minutes, my other guest, Minister René Orellana Halquier, will be speaking. He is the Minister of Development Planning of Bolivia. He is a sociologist and holds a PhD from the University of Amsterdam. He was the head of the Bolivian delegation to the 17, 18, 19, and 20 UN Conference on Climate Change, and he participated in the historical COP21, which some of you follow in Paris last December. I'm very jealous that you were there. I'm not so sure if I was jealous, but I'm sure lots of different interesting things you'll be able to tell us. He was a member of the working group on the UN framework to the elaboration of Sustainable Development Goals 2013-2014. Minister Orellana will speak about the ways in which the Global South, which is very important to our unit, of course, has exercised leadership, influence in the vital debates about the sustainable development path in which the international community has embarked on. For those Twitter users, you see me on the phone. I'm not texting anyone. I'm tweeting. But the hashtag for today's event is LSE Bolivia. Please put your phones, having said that, on silent so that we don't interrupt the event. This event is being recorded, which reminds me I need to get your permission to do so. I suppose I have it now that you're on the spot. But we will have a podcast available in a couple of weeks or so, hopefully before then. As usual, after the public lecture, there will be a chance for you to put your questions to the minister. So if there is something that you don't agree with, you will have your chance to put a question forward. I will be chairing the event, and I will give you the chance to ask a question once we get to that point. But for now, would you please join me in welcoming Minister Arce and Orellana to the LSE to deliver their lecture entitled Inclusive Sustainable Development When the Global South Economies Head South, Lessons from Bolivia. Welcome to the LSE.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here to the LSE and Dr. Mendes, which is in charge of this conference. I would like also to thankful to all of the British institutions that have been possible to be here this time. Since we don't have much time, I will start with the Bolivian economic model. I don't know if I click here. Okay. I have some figures, some presentations here. First of all, I would like to start saying you that Bolivia has changed in 2006 the old neoliberalist model that was in place for 20 years in Bolivia. Since 1985 up to 2005, we have the neoliberalism, as many countries and many in South America still applying this kind of policies. Well, we decided to change the policy back on the people that vote against the neoliberalism model and trying to do something different because the neoliberalists didn't have any results for the Bolivian people and for the Bolivian economy. So it is important to say that so that I can explain a little bit what the Bolivian economic model. I have a long presentation, but I will adjust to the 20 minutes that he told me about. Just beginning with the Bolivian economic model, what we have called the Bolivian economic, social, communitarian, productive model. I'm not going to go through it, but I'm going to explain the model. It's very simple, the model, because the Bolivian people, we think very simply, you know. First, we talk about the economic social model, which is against, and we are the converse, we are the antithesis of the neoliberalist model, but because in the neoliberalist model, they emphasize only in the finance sector and not in the real sector, and even worse, in the social sector. So we recovered the main streams of economics, which is a social science. Economics is not a mathematical and finance science. It is essentially a social science. So that's the main issue we recover from the economic, because if we, the economists, we don't solve the problem of people, we have to go home because we are not arranging everything for everybody, for people. So that's the main thing. We didn't have to use both work together, but we would like to make a difference from our model to the neoliberalist model. So an economic social model. Communitarian has two senses. First is because we are recovering the principles, the values of the indigenous people in Bolivia. It is a very inclusive model for all people that live in Bolivia, and we have a lot of indigenous people living with us. So we included them, their values, like solidarity and other values that they have, and they survive to the neoliberalist model. And also, it is communitarian because we try to solve the problem of the majority of the population. It means that we are looking not for small groups in Bolivia or few people that make rich under the umbrella of the state, but we would like to solve the problem of the majority of the people of the communitarian. So that's why we call it a communitarian model. And the last word, productive, is maybe the main issue for us, because we understand. We used to be, as I'm going to show you later, that Bolivia used to be the poorest country in South America, and the only way that Bolivia could get money is to extend a hand and ask money for, you know, governments, friend governments, and so on. We decided that the best way to sort it, to overcome the poverty in Bolivia, is production. production. Production model is the main issue for us. That's why we call it the economic, social, communitarian, productive model. How it works? This is a graph that has been shown in many universities in Europe, even here in United States, in United States and even in UK. This graph, you can read it from the left to the right. First, we identify the national resources we have. It means hydrocarbon, mining, electricity, which we call it the strategic sectors, where, you know, Bolivia is well known that it's a very rich country in natural resources. But when we look at our pockets, there's no money in our pockets. So we started to think why we are a poorer country if we have a lot of natural resources. So that's the main issue, and of course it's the antithesis also of the one of the theories that talk about the natural resources, you know. Then once we have identified the natural resources that Bolivia has, we are starting to think what kind of country we're going to build. And you can see to the right-hand side the economic side of the model that we would like to build, which is in the industrialized country with the income and employment generating sectors, which are industry, manufacturing, insurance, farming, housing, trade, and everything that a normal country used to have, but we didn't in the past. So money can go to the, from the national resources sectors to the, in order to build the new country. All the surpluses from the strategic sectors go to the new economic side of the model. But since we have an heritage, which is the poverty in Bolivia, the social problems, the debt with people, the state also has to redistribute money, not only building up the industrialized country, but also redistribute income and poverty reduction in order to eliminate the poverty. So we have two things to solve. First, we are building a new country, which will be industrialized country, and also we are building a more equal country with redistribution money in Bolivia. So that's the way the model works. Of course, it is very easy to tell, but it's a little bit complicated to do it. Fortunately for me, I together with Mr. Carlos Villegas, which is the former YPFB president, and myself, we build up this model in the university. And we have the opportunity, thanks to President Morales, not only to think about the model, but to do it, to implant the model in Bolivia. And of course, what were the difficulties here? First of all, the national resources were in the transnational hands. It means the international enterprises, so we have to nationalize all the national resources in order to have the control of the strategic sectors, in order to have surplus and to redistribute this money to the industrialized country and also to solve the social problems. That's why we, in May 1st of 2006, the first thing that President Morales instructed us was to nationalize the hydrocarbon sectors, and we did it. Of course, somebody could say it's a bad signal for the markets, and we will see if it was a bad signal. Then we started to make the more difficult thing. We had to industrialize all the national resources, first of all, in state hands. So we have to strengthen, to enhance our public enterprises. And also, we started to issue some redistribute policy measures that we made in October 2006. We have some social policies. We call here Bono Juancito Pinto, which is illiteracy against the illiteracy we have at the time, and also the school, the children didn't complete their course in the school, so we have an incentive for them. Also, The universal rent for people, which we call renta dignidad, everybody has a rent in Bolivia when they have 60 years old. Bono Juan Azurduy, cross-subsidization, social policies, all these social policies were made with money which comes from the strategic sectors. So we started to build also the industrialized process in Bolivia. This year we are starting our urea plant from gas. So we are diversifying the economy. We're not going to export only gas, because the idea is to change the matrix of export from our economy. And we would like to export now more value-added products and you know, in the time without exporting any raw materials. That's the idea, and that's the main objective we have. So that's the way the model works. I have some mathematical. We have a formalization of the social communitarian model. We did it in a mathematical way, so that we sustain mathematically that the model was doing right. I don't have much time to go through. 10 minutes test. So I'm going to go to the some results. Here you have the index of the GDP growth trend in many South American countries. This line you see here is the Bolivian growth rate, and you can see it is very very nice trend of growth in Bolivia against all the countries you have here. You can see here Brazil, you have here Argentina, you have here Ecuador. You know, used to have Peru was growing faster than us, but since 2013, they started to, you know, slow down, as it is common with the international prices, and so on. So you at this graph, you look that the Bolivian economy is very strong and steadily. You can have here the gold medal we have in growth rate in the regions in 2009, when everybody was facing the United States crisis, as you remember. Bolivia had, for the first time in our life, 3.4%, which was the highest growth rate in the region, and also 2014 with 5.5%, and in last year with 4.8%. As you can see, three times under the Evo Morales presidency, we have reached the highest growth rate in the region. Then, if you look at what the domestic gross product we have, we used to produce $9 billion. Now we are producing $33 billion. We're getting more productive because of the model incentives the production in Bolivia. And also the GDP per capita grow from $1,000 US dollars to three times, to $3,000 US dollars per capita. So it thinks in the productive sector we are doing well. And why is that? And that's the key issue. We changed the model. We don't rely on the external demand. We are relying on the internal demand, and that the blue line is the contribution of the internal demand in growth. So you can see that our model is working. Also, I have some figures, some econometric regressions, and that we did it that contributes to and supports what we are doing. This is a very important graph, because you look at the blue line. The blue line is Bolivia again. Only Ecuador at that time was having a higher ratio of public investment against GDP. And the other countries, you know, very low. We have almost 15% of the GDP in public investment. And the rest of the countries in Bolivia had, for example, Brazil, 2.2%, you know. That's one of the reasons why Bolivia is still growing, because we bet on the public sector rather in the private sector, as the neoliberalist model states. So that's one of the reasons why Bolivia is growing and many other countries are not growing, from our point of view. Of course, we have more, but some social results. Extreme poverty has been reduced very fastly. And 2 days ago, the World Bank published that Bolivia was very faster than other countries in the world, I think. Here's the representative of the World Bank. So we did that very fastly, as it's shown in the picture. From 38% of the extreme poverty in 2005, we have only 17%. It means that because we are almost mostly 10 million people, and in the past we have nearly 4 million people in the poverty. Now we have only 1.7 people in poverty, so we are reducing very fastly. And when we compare the reduction of the extreme poverty, we did it in a very high percentage, 21% more or less, faster than the other countries, Peru 17%, Ecuador 11%, and also Paraguay, you will see 7.1% of reduction. So we have good results here. And also, if you have how to show that we are making more equal country, you can see the 10%, the richest 10% against the poorest 10%, we have in the past 928 times the richest of the 10% against the poorest. But now we have only 39%. We have reduced the difference between rich people and poor country. But of course, we didn't do poorer to the rich people in my country. We did the converse. We gave more richness to the poorer people, and that's it. And of course, if you look at the ratio in the poorest, we used to be the more unequal country, had 80%, now are in the middle, in the average, I would say, of South America. And lastly, because they say 5 minutes here, the Gini coefficient, we were, as you look at it in the right-hand side graph, together with Brazil, we were the more unequal countries with 0.60 and 0.61 Gini index. And being in 2005 the most unequal countries, we get the fifth more equal country in South America, and it's, you know, for 47%. And you can see in the left-hand side a Gini index, how it dropped in a very important way. Other indicators are the unemployment rate. We used to have 8%, 8.7% of unemployment rate, and now we have 3.5%, and now we are the lowest unemployment rate of the region as well. And we have an increase, very important increase in the national minimum wage. It used to be $55 US dollars. Now it is 263, and we are building internal demand. And internal demand, again, you know, is helping us for the growth. I have the Central Bank net international reserves. We are the highest ratio, even with the, you know, the crisis is getting some of the reserves of the whole South American countries, but we still have almost $12 billion dollars as net international reserves, and we still have 39% of the ratio international reserves against GDP, which is very, very nice, because that's why it's one of the reasons why Bolivia is doing better than other countries. Also, the long-term public external debt, we reduced it from 52% of the GDP in 2005 and only 17, and now it's 19% according to the last figures we have. So we can manage very, very nicely the external debt. And if you compare with all countries in the rest of the countries, you used to be the one of the highest external debt public debt ratio, but now we are almost in the average. I think we were going to stop here. Just the last one, which is the fiscal balance. As I make jokes in the university, Bolivia used to be as the Bolivian soccer team, you know, at the bottom of the table always. But now, you know, in the fiscal balance, we are now in the third place of the better performance of fiscal balance. I will stop here and give the word to Gustav. Thank you.
I'm very impressed with your timekeeping abilities. Excellent, I have to say. We're not going to open the floor to questions, so I would advise you to think about a question or so in the next 30 seconds while I welcome our second speaker. to the podium. Minister René Orellana, as I introduced him before, will be speaking about some issues about sustainability in the Global South and leadership for Bolivia. So please welcome welcome to the LSE again. And you have 21 minutes, because he gave you one of his minutes. So.
Okay. He is. Well, let me please look for my presentation, which is should be here. That's it. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. It's an honor to be with you, professors and students, visiting the university that is the place where my colleague studied. He always talk about it, and it is very good to know where you discuss and create and analyze and innovate on policies. We have done that on the basis of a dialogue with social organizations, social movements, as you have. As maybe you know, these changes made in Bolivia emerges precisely from social movements, and this innovation creativity has come from them. Initially, there were a lot of doubts about the possible success of the model, and as you have seen, the figures show clearly that the model is working. What are the next steps? What are we going to do in the near future? We had 10 years of a very interesting process with important results in the social field, in the economical field. Now we have big challenges: diversifying our economy, continuing reducing poverty, continuing reducing inequality, strengthening our productive systems, creating conditions for improving the productivity of different sectors, mainly agriculture, of course, other sectors too, in which we have the presence of communities, communitarian economic systems, as well as peasant systems, indigenous productive systems, as well as medium and small and big companies that are part of the economy. I have to welcome and present you our good friend Ronald Nostas, who is the president. He's here with us, the president of the Confederation of the Private Companies of Bolivia. He's a very powerful industry entrepreneur in Bolivia. He's going to export chia oil to China, and he's in the pharmaceutical sector. That gives you a clear message that we are working together with entrepreneurs, with private companies, and we are here, in fact, having an event in order to attract foreign private investors. So then the question comes again, what is the next step? We have a plan for a long term, which is called the Patriot Agenda. The horizon of this plan is the year 2025, with a very ambitious target, for example, like eradicating poverty. The Sustainable Development Goals defined by United Nations has decided to eradicate poverty as a goal for the year 2030. We have decided to achieve that goal by 2025, so we have to make very important steps in the next years and do it in the context of strengthening our production and connecting our country into the global turns, trends, into the global chains of productions, into the global chains of values. What are then the next steps? We have decided to invest in the context of our medium-term plan. We have a long-term plan till 2025 as a limit in terms of goals, a time frame for a long-term plan. We have a medium-term plan of 5 years, and we have decided to invest in these 5 years $48 billion in infrastructure, in the social area, in health, building hospitals, investing more than $1.7 billion in hospitals, for example, just to put an example, investing more or less $11 billion in infrastructure of roads, bridges, airports, ports, etc. So in a very, I would say, ambitious intent to solve the problem that we have, which is the lack of infrastructure and communication with a lot of parts of the country. At the same time, we have decided to invest $5.6 billion in generation of electricity. Bolivia is in the heart of South America, so we have a very advantageous position there that allows us to export electricity to the neighbors' countries like Brazil, which is a country that needs, in addition to its capacity of generation, more or less 10,000 megawatts per year, as well as Argentina that needs more or less 1,000 megawatts per year in addition to its capacity of generation. So that gives interesting opportunities to create new sources of finance. But what is going, how is, are they, are these projects of infrastructure and energy, as well as others, connect us to the world? This is a very important question. Let me try to show you with this map of Bolivia what is going to happen if the plan works as we have decided to do. In fact, we are already making this investment. This is not going to be in the near future. We have already begun with some of these roads, for example. You can see there in the lines, the red lines, which are the roads that are part of our plan 2016-2020. Different kind of roads which are in blue, that are roads with major capacity in order to allow the transport of into the corridor that connects us, Brazil to Peru, through Bolivia, the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean. In the middle, you can see a very ambitious project, which is the Bioceanic Rail Corridor. We have a road that is also a corridor, the Central Corridor, already built. We have to improve it. We're working on it. But, of course, also to connect the Amazonian region, which is here, and needs to be interconnected with the main cities as well as with the basic services provided by other cities, but other other locations in the country, as well as to have access to markets and connect to the other countries, to the main markets and main cities of the other countries. This is part of the plan. This is precisely where we are going to invest this $11 billion in order to connect the country, as I have mentioned. Most of these roads have already financial resources. Some of them with some banks. I can mention the World Bank, who is here, represented by a good friend that works in Bolivia, the CAF, which is a bank of the Andean region. We have, of course, also Chinese loans, as well as European loans through the European Bank, for example. And I can mention other sources. Some of these roads that are in red are already in process of being constructed. Well, how do we connect the country through these roads? In the North Corridor to Brazil and Peru, you can see also the interconnection to the Amazon region. We have to work hardly in this connection because we have a lot of populations, small towns and areas of the Amazon where we cannot reach in certain months of the year where we have floods, for example, and there are a lot of problems there, health problems, they need basic services, hospitals, etc. So interconnection is central whenever we decide to planify, not only from an economical perspective, but from a social one too. Let me show you now the interconnection to the Andean region, that is Peru, as you can see, that the plan allows us precisely to build infrastructure that will connect us to these main cities as well as markets in order to also to have access to the Pacific. The interconnection to the south, which implies, of course, Argentina, Paraguay, etc., the interconnection with Brazil through the south area and the interconnection in the central part of Bolivia, where are the main cities, as you can see there. What implication has to build these roads and to build these railroads, for example, in terms of productive of productions and also the connection of the productions, the productive hubs to the markets? Let's propose some kind of products. For example, the case of the soybean. You can see Bolivia, in fact, is one of the main producers of the soybean. So you can now in this map see how clearly they are linked to the different roads we are going to build in the next years. The case of the quinoa. Quinoa is an important product in Bolivia. In fact, we are the second larger exporter of quinoa. We have different kinds of quinoa. We have very good potential there in order to have access to other markets in the world. Cacao is another potential product that is growing in Bolivia. It's in process of being diversified, and so, in fact, we have state companies, public companies, working in connection, in coordination with communities, peasant communities and indigenous communities. Amazon products also, the diverse kinds of Amazon products that have interesting potentials in terms of nutrition, in terms of health products, etc. Let me mention also chestnut, or what is now known as a Bolivian nut, or Amazon nut, or Brazilian nut sometimes. Well, we are one of the main exporters in the world of nuts. In fact, we are exporting to England $40 million per year, more or less. We are also industrializing, in a process of industrialization of nut. Our good friend here is also going to export nut oil. Is it nut oil? To China. We are very happy and we are very proud to say that. So important markets in the international arena are opening us opportunities in order to have these connections between the industry of the private sector and the producers, communities, indigenous peasants also in these chains of production. That implies also the necessity, as I have mentioned, to have this infrastructure that will allow us to provide the logistic, the transportation of these products and articulate the different actors, communitarian actors in the productive sectors, as well as small companies, medium companies, of different size, even big companies, and promote the industrialization in the context of the interconnection. Leather is another product with a lot of potential. We have decided to allocate different industry with the support of the public investment. The state is going to continue, as my colleague has said, being one of the engines of the production, of the transformation of raw materials, of the industrialization, coordinating and strengthening also the private initiative of the national investors, private companies, as well as foreign investors. We have been already investing in small factories, centers of technology, which provides advice, technical assistance to the producers of small scale and medium scale. Camelids is a very important potential also that we have that will allow us, for example, to produce leather of camelids as well as other products. Amaranth and other products also that are part of our potential and are opening markets in a lot of parts of the world, as you will see soon. Chia is also interesting. We have also entrepreneurs that are producing chias and private companies that are producing chia oil and exporting chia oil and opening new markets. Well, then, in addition, we are creating and strengthening the companies that we have already created, public companies, for example, for assembling computers. We have a public company which is called Kipus. We are working hardly on the possibility of finding a foreign investor so that could invest in this public company and make that's a very important possibility, make a mixed company, public partner, public-private partnership in order to strengthen this initiative of the state, as well as other companies that we have that produce glass. For example, we have a new company that has been recently created to produce glass in Bolivia, bottles, for example, or paper. Of course, it is part of our plan, the national plan we have, to attract investments for producing automobiles and other products as textiles. Here, you can see the complete map. This is how we see the future, the interconnection between the productive hubs, or cluster, if you want to name as that, with the corridors, the roads, that articulate internally the country and articulate us to the external markets. Let's see what happens if we put this in a global map. And in addition, we put this huge project on which we're working, which is the bioceanic or trans or yes, bioceanic railroad. This is another important project that we are working on in order to make it real. We are planning to have an agreement, political agreement with Brazil and Peru, and we have advanced seriously and in this direction. We have had meetings with the presidents and governments of Brazil and Peru, and we have very mature agreements at the political level in order to initiate the financial and economic studies in order to make reality the construction of a bioceanic railway that is going to connect the port of Santos with the port of Ilo, as you can see here in Peru. This is going to promote and support these initiatives that I have mentioned related to the reinforcement of the productive hubs that we already have, the possibility of investing financial resources and improving these productive hubs inside the country. And this will also allow us, this railway, as well as the other corridors that are part of the infrastructure of roads that we are going to build, we are already building, will going to connect us to the and improve the connection to global markets, as you can see here. One of the main markets, as you know, of course, is precisely China. You can see the one of the global corridors that already works, besides the fact that the railroad does not exist by the moment, but we have roads that connects Brazil to Peru. You can see there that some characteristic of this railway that is going to be built in the near future. We're working hardly with the countries I mentioned and also with private investors. We hope we're going to have a public-private company that is going to manage this project and build this project with private resources as well as with public resources. Let's see what happens if we connect the main routes. Let me skip this part because it is related with flights and commercial flights, but let's look for the maritime and terrestrial corridors. Well, what happens if we see what's going to happen with the soy export? You can see here some of the corridor of the soy export. Soy is a very important product of Bolivia. Soybean has been growing. Well, lately we have had problems with the prices of soy, but it is a reality that countries, for example, like China, is going to need soy in the next years, considering the necessity of consumption of its population as well as Europe. So this is one. These are part of the possible corridors for the soybean that could allow us also, not only us, but other countries that will going to are going to use the railway, the central railway, will allow us to export soy to other countries, including China, as you can see, and other countries in Central America. What's going to happen with the export potential of chestnut using this corridor and improving the interconnection in Bolivia, so that supporting and strengthening our capacity of production of nuts? You can see there some of the corridors of export for chestnut going to potential markets for chestnut. I have mentioned that we are covering part of the global market of chestnut. Almost 75% of the market now is covered by the nut we produce in Bolivia, the ecological and organic nut. So we have a very good potential there also, of course, also reinforcing the economy of indigenous and peasant communities. Let's see what happens with other products. The chestnut oil, if we support the initiatives of industrializing the chestnut oil, for example, the possibilities that we have for exports are very interesting, opening new markets and creating other markets that are or increasing the possibility of exports in other markets. Let's see what happens with stevia. We are now investing in stevia with some kind of sugar with zero calories. And then what's going to, you know stevia very well. Well, we are producing that. We are supporting the production of stevia in our country. These are the potential markets that we have to work on. Let's see what's going to happen with leather. I showed you a map with the clusters of leather in Bolivia in which we are working. Well, what are the potential markets of leather in the near future, as well as camelid fine hair and wool, using also the corridors that you can see there, including the railway by the central part of Bolivia. So we have interesting opportunities in amaranth, for example. You can see there some roots that goes to certain markets for amaranth and cañagua, very nutritious food that we have. You can see now, for example, plastic. We are now investing, we have decided to invest $2 billion in a factory, in an industry of propylene and polypropylene. So we are going to produce plastic very soon, in the next three years, maybe 2 years or something. So we are now exploring the possible markets which could be open to export plastic, and of course the possibility of using this plastic inside our country for our own industry. Let's see what happens with chia, and I'm going to finish there, which is also an interesting product that we are exporting, and we hope we are going to industrialize it, and the possible markets that opens, the doors that opens in the international market for our products. So I wanted to show this because it is important not only to see what happens inside Bolivia, but whenever we put the question about the global connection, about the global change of value, the question is, how are we going to be connected to these corridors of exports and imports and take advantage of them in order to strengthen the economy and generate richness and distribute these resources, these revenues, and of course continue decreasing poverty, reducing inequality, etc. We have to work hardly, strengthening our economy. This is part of the plan of development that we have decided, in which we see ourselves in relation to the world, considering export, considering trade, and of course considering investment of domestic actors as well as foreign actors. Thank you very much.
We're working with a microphone here. Hopefully it will work. But this is a classroom, which is nice because both lectures were like classes. Actually. It reminded me of ourselves. Being the moderator and the chair gives me the advantage of stealing the show a little bit by asking them questions to start with. But I promise I'll give you the floor in a second. Both of you presented very clear plans. I know that you have to condense a lot of information given the time. I'd like to start with Minister Luis Alberto Arce. You talk about the growth of Bolivia, and I think the numbers support your your point. But as an academic, I'm concerned about the region. I mean, the level of commodities that we're putting so much emphasis on commodities in Latin America in general. So my question for you is, I agree with you that Bolivia has grown better than other regions in other countries in Latin America. But is it that the commodities that you are actually exporting are not suffering yet a crash in the prices? Or how do we protect that in the long term? That's perhaps the way of putting that. And you can answer it to me in a second, because that's very important, being able to get out of this commodity trap, which is very important, especially in regard to dependency on China as a buyer. We are concerned about that, because Peru, Chile, and many other countries in the region are already experiencing that, despite the fact that they still have positive numbers, their economies are being affected. And the second question for my guest here on my left hand side, Minister Neorellan, is about this agenda, which is also, I find it very persuasive, but more persuasive if we were just in an academic setting. We talk about long-term policies in class, and I still always laugh because I talk about 2025, 2050. But how do we do this in a political environment where it's difficult to have long-term policy making when you have different governments going back and forth in Latin America? You talk about Peru. You said that you did have, and I believe you were there in March, talking about the corridor, the Arsenico Central. But the government is also changing in Peru. How do you maintain, and what is the main advantage of your proposition to the other one that would actually skip Bolivia, come from Brazil all the way to Peru, is a long one. What would be the main advantage? I'll stop there, and then I promise you I'll get you the chance to ask questions. So perhaps we can start with you, with your answer to this.
Thank you. Let me come back, because I knew the question, you know. It is the same question I receive frequently, so yeah, here. There's a paper that I would like to show you. There is a structural autoregressive vector model that shows that the it's in blue, what I wanted to stress, is that domestic demand, which is confirmed by consumption and investment, is the principal determinant of Bolivian economic growth. So what we did, in the past, in the neoliberalist model, the growth was based on the external demand. But many countries in South America recently, they devaluate currencies according to the theory because they wanted to improve, to enhance the exports. That's what the theory says. But what happened? Nothing happened. Why? Because there is not only a currency problem, exchange rate problem. The problem is much bigger than that. Europe is not growing, so there is no demand. United States is still in progress, so there is no demand. So if you devaluate currencies, you only will have that my colleague, the former Ministry of Economy in Brazil, used to say, which is the war, currency war. And that's what happened. Everybody used to, you know, they started to devaluate, and the only thing they are receiving, the countries in South America, they have more inflation because of the pass-through effect. So you have capitals flowing out from these countries. They have employment. They are... slowing down their economies and so on, because they rely the growth on the external sector. And in my country, the opposite parties, the neoliberalist economies that's still there, you know, they used to say that Bolivia is doing well because of the international prices. So you have high prices, and that's why you're doing well. You are lucky, you know, because the prices went up just when the President Evo took the power. And it was wrong, because the international prices were good for everybody since 2003. And President Morales took the power in 2006. So what's the difference? What's the difference? A different policy. We are relying on the internal demand, taking off many people from the poverty. So we have more demand, internal demand. we are more equal country in Bolivia, so everybody is getting a better good of life, you know, and so more demand. The private sector is producing more, so we have more employment, better wages, and so on. So we discover that many of the papers, you know, I have here a list of papers. I would like to stress Mr. Kalecki, you know, Mr. Kalecki, 1930, 1940, you know, income redistribution is the key determinant of economic growth through domestic demand, the main idea. Who was Mr. Kalecki? In universities, many people didn't teach what Mr. Kalecki used to talk about, you know. And we can talk about many economists here, but we have changed the model. When the economists, the main economists in the world are doing badly, you know, so you have to look at the internal demand. And we have not only the internal demand, because we have to strain and enhance our internal demand, but more important, we have many people in the poverty. So we took advantage of that, you know, take off from the poverty all of these people, make more strong internal demand. The state contributes to the internal demand with investment, public investment. So we are just, that's the way we are growing based, as the paper said here, on the consumption and investment, not relying on the prices or in the external sector.
But still, your argument is also external. China is important, so it's both, I suppose, not just internal, I guess, external.
Yeah, of course.
And if you could perhaps answer that, and then we'll open the floor to questions.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for the question. Internal market is important, that's true, but of course external market is also important. It gives us financial resources, dollars, it increases our reserves, it contributes to it, and we are very much interested in changing our commercial or trade balance, of course. But this is very much theoretical. In fact, what we are pointing on is on a strengthening the production of the small communitarian producers, distributing the incomes, the revenues, creating possibilities of jobs, etc. So export is important. And it is a fact that China and India are very big markets for our economy, not only our economy, but for the economy of the world, besides the fact that China has decelerated its economy, that's true, but it's growing at 6.5% as an average, will be growing in the next 5 years. India will be growing as an average in 7.5% in the next 5 years. I don't say so. It's in the documents of the World Bank and the IMF. So these two big countries are going to set the pace of the economy in the next years. Of course, the demand and the markets are going to be different in the next years, compared with the last 10 years. Raw materials, natural resources are still going to be important, but they are going to demand different kind of products. In the year 2030, China is going to have 1 billion persons in the middle class. India already has 500 million persons in the middle class. So the products they demand, for example, for food, are very much different from those that they demanded before. Then comes the opportunity that we have with, for example, nutritious and healthy food. I have just mentioned the very stress this group of food. Of course, we can talk about another goods. I didn't want to mention, for example, gas, oil, or even mining, but I wanted to stress these other products so that I give you the signal, the clear message, that we are pointing to diversify our production, increase our productivity, industrialize these new products that are opening markets, different kind of markets in the world, thinking in the future. About the railway, the central railway, and the political possibilities that are going to push this project, this ambitious project forward. Of course, we understand that there are political problems in Brazil. Peru is changing the president. I don't know who finally won.
It's
Kuczynski. Well, okay. But we have
a little bit, I think.
A little bit. Well, a small difference. Well, it's important for you to know that there was a meeting of presidents and cabinets of Peru, Bolivia, last year. Was it in May? And both presidents signed an agreement, a political agreement. I don't remember the exact term, technical term, in the context of a meeting of 2 days. And one of the points of this agreement clearly states the agreement for building the central railway, the bioceanic railway. And in fact, Peru took the lead and contracted a pre-feasibility study of the Peruvian part of the railway, of the central railway, and now this pre-feasibility project is in process of being made by a company. I don't know which company has been made. In the case of Brazil, there has been a meeting of the two presidents and an agreement, political agreement, that included technical meetings that have been already made at the level of ministers, vice ministers, and other technicians in order to explore the financial conditions, the financial and economic potentials of this railway that is not going to compete with the other railway that Brazil is planning to build with Chinese funds, loans, that is going to go through the north, through the Amazonian region, not through Bolivia, and go to Peru through the north part of Brazil and connect the north part of Brazil, which is very much, very less rich than the quotation quotes than the south part or the central part. There's a lot of poverty there, so we understand that the part of the strategy of Brazil is connect those populations as well as to extend the frontier of the soja. Well, that's their project. What we want is to be part of a corridor, a railway project that is going to dynamize the trade as well as dynamize the industry, the industrialization in the case of our country. Thank you.
Okay, now is the time. I'm going to be speaking a bit loud because you have a microphone. So I'm going to take 3 questions at a time, and then we'll get back to you with the answers. I'm hoping to get at least 3 rounds of questions. We have 25 minutes, roughly, for this. So. By saying that, I'm going to ask you to be brief as well. Don't give us a talk and a speech. Just go directly to the question. Who would like to start first, please? And identify yourself quickly.
Last follow on, I comment on commodities of BBC and other stations. I have 2 questions. First, about a report recently in The Economist about a project to link Bolivia through Peru, exchange of territory. Making Bolivia not a landlocked country, but to ease it through sovereign kind of swap of territory. How far do you think this will assure investors? And number 2, about per capita income being lifted to $3,000 is impressive in 10 years, but it's still too low, as I see it. So how far do you think all what we talk about projects can get in? Messages to investors as well, and tourists and whatever. How far in short term, 5 years, would it be lifted to 12,000 or whatever?
Excellent, thank you very much. I'm going to ask you just 1 question. You were able to do 2, but go ahead. Yes, you.
Ricky Gutierrez, former CEPAL, United Nations. Minister, you spoke a really interesting project about the bioceanic railway. When I was working in CEPAL, we made an interesting study about inland shipping, the hydro river of Paraguay, Paraná, and its possible benefits. What is the government doing right now in the case of the hydro river? Because I see the potential it has, and as you shown the maps of, for example, exports of soy to the markets of Europe, this could facilitate exports and the routes of the inland shipping. So my question is, what is the government doing in the case of such an important logistics connection?
Thank you. Hydro.
Yeah, La Hidrovía Paraguay-Paraná.
Okay. One more, please. Yes.
Thank you.
This is about the companies that are basically closing in Bolivia. What sort of policies does the government have at the moment with regards unfair policy? For instance, Enertex at the moment is having a very bad time, and it is being hurt because of the competition and this kind of clothes that is coming from abroad that is second-hand. Another one is just probably, I'm Bolivian, I live here for many years. What sort of a planning do you have, basically, with regards to people going back to Bolivia and trying to kind of start living back there, well, knowing that they have perhaps just a level professions, some middle-level round professions?
That's enough. Five questions, actually. That's for three. Now we have five. Would you like to start?
Can we hear?
Yeah. You can. Yeah, we can just start. Yeah.
Can you hear us? Yeah. Can you hear us? Or I need the microphone. Okay. Thank you.
Microphone.
Okay.
Well, I'll refer to two of the questions, and my colleague, I think, will answer the rest. About the closing policies, or I mean the closing enterprises in Bolivia. But it's very usual, you know, this kind of factor, which is an external one, that nobody can compete with the Chinese textiles. It is impossible to do it, even in Paraguay, even in Peru and many countries. So what we have to do is to change the policy again to the where we are more competitive, because we cannot, compete with shoes and everything that the Chinese people is producing. It's very complicated. We are not productive as productive as they are. But we have, for example, wood from llamas, wood from alpacas, wood from and textiles, native textiles, let's say, that we have competitiveness, and we are going to take advantage of that. We are building up a new textile industry based on this world. So we have to take advantage of that. And the problem that we were facing with Enatex, which is the state company, we think that it was already broken by the private sector. We made a mistake, because this industry was already broken 5 to 8 years ago. It was broken. But because of we didn't, cause more unemployment at that time, we decided to buy it, and we negotiated with, at that time, the owner of this enterprise, and we paid the price because at the end, even we did everything in order to sell to save this industry, we failed. So it is not our complete fail, It is the problem to buy an enterprise that was broken before. So we are not, the textile sector will be facing some problems, but we are replacing for a new industry which will be more competitive for us. Talking about the people that going back to Bolivia, it's a very good question, because why Bolivian people is coming back to Bolivia? Because we are better off than in other countries. In the past, people, we are 10 million living in Bolivia, but if you add people who at the time went to United States, to Spain, to Brazil and Argentina, we would be 13, 14 billion people, million people. Yeah? But of course, we are losing that labor force. And what we have done since the crisis in 2008, we state a policy that means that all the Bolivians who came back to the country, they are free to bring all the stuff they have, and they pay anything for coming back. And also, last year we have a very, very nice figure when people coming especially from United States and Spain, and this year coming from Brazil, they are coming back. So they are receiving all these benefits for coming back to Bolivia.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. About the sovereign access to the coast, the Pacific coast, that was one of the questions. As you know, we have a judicial demand. Is that the world? Yes, judicial presented to the Hague. Trial, yes, to the Hague. It's a case presented to the Hague, which is a complaint that is going to be solved by the Hague, the trial of the Hague, the international court. So we have presented all our arguments, and of course we have heard the ones coming from Chile. This is something that's going to take a very long time to be decided. But whenever we talk about the railway, of the biosonic railway, that is going to connect us to the Ilo port as well, which is in the Pacific as well, to the Atlantic port of Santos, we're not talking about sovereign access. We're talking about the possibility of having a company, a public-private company, that controls and manages the whole railway. We have to think about what kind of legal framework is going to be the base for that, and make business with it. And we have assets as a state, as well as the state of Peru, as well as the state of Brazil. And we also have the participation of the private sector, so that they could, with us, invest in this very expensive project. Expensive because it's going to cost maybe more than $10 billion. We cannot afford this project by ourselves. We need to have partners, and we are pushing for and encouraging other actors in order to participate in this ambitious project, which is more, I would say, feasible to be done compared with the other project of the railway crossing the north part of the Amazon region in Brazil and going then to Peru, far away from the territory of Bolivia. So this is the way we are thinking about this railway. About the GDP per capita, the plan that we have recently approved, the plan 2016-2020, has as a goal to increase the GDP per capita from $3,000 by 2020 to $5,000. That includes, of course, the increasing of our GDP from $34 billion that we have now to $57 billion by 2020. That is why we have to invest in production, in diversification of the production, in productivity, and what I have presented in the PowerPoint is part of this plan. I think I am
good. Okay, we have time for more questions if you like. Robert, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your very interesting speech. My name is Robert Sita. I write about China and the China and Latin America. My question is, one industry or industrial sector that you are developing in Bolivia that you didn't mention is the lithium industry, which is obviously very important with the demand for smartphones, electric cars, moving towards more sustainable transport systems and that kind of thing, with the help of Chinese technology and investment. I wonder what you can tell me you are doing to guarantee that the lithium industry in Bolivia won't see the same kind of environmental ill effects that we've seen in China with lithium production.
Enrique, I didn't forget your question. We'll come back to that. We're going to take two more questions and then we'll get back to you. Yes? Yes.
Well, I want to know when the Bolivian government start to exporting our goods that they said, if there are start to thinking in our people, for example, in like quinoa products that they start to exporting, I have some information that in Bolivia the price is now too high, and the people who used to access to eat this product, they have to stop. And I want to know if they are checking these kind of things for the start to exporting chia or these other products. Thank you.
One more question. just to clarify, I didn't call the results in Peru. You have to check that. They're waiting for the final bit. So just to clarify, my colleague, let's start with the one about lithium.
Well, thank you for the questions. First, there was one question left about the Hydroway. We are using it, and we are making some improvements in Puerto Buch, that is the end of the Bolivian side of the Hydroway, because we are looking at the Mutum. Mutum is a big iron resource that we have in the southeast of the country. We did a mistake when we give these resources to the Indian company Jindal, that promised us to industrialize this resource, but they didn't have money at the end, so we have to left, you know, and we are trying to do it ourselves. And now there is an agreement with a Chinese company that will develop the iron industry there, and we will be exporting for through the Hydroway to the Atlantic. So we are building some ports, you know, some features there that are needed to, in order to have a port, a small port for these exports. About the lithium, not only for the lithium, but all the natural resources. What we decided is to do all the mining, all what is in our hands at the end of the Bolivian technology. And then we will hire and we will maybe make some agreements with the strategic companies to work with us. What does it mean? In the lithium product, we are doing, for example, the mining. We have already divided into, split into the potassium chlorurum and the lithium. With our own technology, we have succeeded on that, but we cannot go further because we would like to industrialize to make some batteries and so on, and we need more technology, and we are looking for any company, a strategic company, to sign an agreement like we did in the urea and ammonium plant with Samsung, the Korean company, as you know. So we are looking for a strategic partner. And the requirement we have for that strategic partner is that the company has to come to Bolivia to establish, to set up in Bolivia, because the plant has to be in Bolivia. We need only the technology. We are going to provide the labor force. We're going to provide the raw materials, but we need the technology, and that's the way we are managing all the natural resources. The industrialization process of the natural resource that Bolivia has, that's the way we are doing that, you know? So at this time, we have two sellers, two resources. One is, of course, the small one, Coipasa in Oruro, and we have the other one, which is the best, the well-known in Uyuni, which is the biggest reserve on lithium we have in all South America. And both, in the small one, we have exploration by a small Chinese company because it's very small resources. But in the second one, we are still looking for a strategic partner. There are many, you know, companies, European companies, Chinese companies that would like to work with us. And we are slowly going in order to choose the best option for the Bolivian objective we have. On the quinoa and the prices, it's a very interesting question because it happens what the person who asked us this question said. At the beginning, when the international prices were very high, everybody produced and exported. So what's the impact in the Bolivian economy? It was that there was no quinoa at all, and the price went up, you know? But now the prices are going down. The quinoa prices went down since last year. So they are small productions for exports because the producers are not willing to produce as much as they did in the past. Internally, the prices are going down as well. So now people can access very easily to buy quinoa, and much easier than it was in the past because of the international prices went down. So it is natural what happened in the price, in the internal price, because it, you know, very a lot of people become producers of quinoa, and they were exporting because of the high price. Now they are changing some products in order to have the same amount of income, but they are not producing as quinoa as they did in the past.
I have one final question. You talk about elections and long-term feasibility for all these plans. And having said that, what is the feasibility of President Evo Morales in another term? We know that we have a referendum, and is this a settled issue? Because I hear different things from different people, and I think my students are also curious about that. And I know that you both work for President Evo Morales, so I ask you in a very ultimate way. He's pushing me. Oh, you're jumping to answer. Okay. No, please go ahead. He's happy to let you.
Okay. Yeah. Very hard question. Well, we have had a referendum. Yeah. There have been a decision there. There have been also a very dirty campaign. We haven't seen this kind of campaign, at least using this new media, which are the nets. We were not familiarized with them. And they clearly attacked hardly and in a dirty way, I would say, to our president. Finally, most of the accusations of the supposed facts that accused our president were clarified at the legal at the assembly through a committee, and with the justice, and of course the journalists that accuse our president was the, I don't remember the name of this journalist, finally recognized that he made a mistake. Well, that's another history. The fact is that we had a referendum. There is a result. There is a discussion about the results of the referendum and the possible future in terms of taking a decision about the leadership we have with our leader, who is Evo Morales, the continuity of our process of change, which is very much important, because as you have said, we have a plan for the next 10 years, as we also have a plan for the next 5 years. And those are part of the policies of a state. We have a new constitution. The country has significantly changed. This is another country. And it's not the country that we had in the neoliberal period. Now we have decreased significantly poverty. Now 22% of the population has gone into the middle class. This has changed a lot. I don't have an answer now for you.
Okay.
Let's see what happens with the political process. And the people is going to decide. I don't know if Luis wants to say something.
Well, look, you cannot fool the people every time. With lies, you know, we have a referendum that we lost, but it is very close. And if you ask people, so far, that they realized that all people were cheated by this journalist that mentioned the Minister of Planning, you will see that now people agree with new referendum. You know, it is legal, it is constitutionally accepted, we could do it. But as the Ministry of Planning said, we are going to wait what people say. We're going to accept the results on February, you know. But of course, people has the last word in my country. They decide. We have back at, you know, in 2005, we have only 54% of the total votes in Bolivia. And in the second term, we have 64. And we remain with this more than 60% of popularity. Even President Morales is more than 10 years in the power. So we can go wherever they want. We are a very democratic country, you know. Our party is completely democratic. We accept what people say, and people said in their votes or, you know, elections, whatever. In the past, you know, President Morales went to four or five elections. The revocatory referendum, the elections, you know, the constitutional reforms and so on. And all of these democratic acts, we won. And we won more than 60% of popularity. So it means that President Morales is still very strong on the population. Our Minister of Planning said, everybody was surprised about the way the campaign was facing, you know. The social nets, it's a new way to do it, and with lies. They say President Morales has a child. There's no child, you know. So far, there's no child. So far, therefore, there is no corruption in the Bolivian government, but, of course, the media was in charge to say to everybody all over the world that we are a corrupt government. But it's not true. But not true. And it's not true not only because of this last event, but also because if you see the figures, if you see what we are doing, if we are a corrupt government, we don't have the investments we have, we couldn't have the growth we have, the poverty reduction, and so on. And I'll be a rich man and not, you know, still a professor in the university.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, I mean, for us, for my students, for the colleagues here, to have policymakers visiting the LSE. We're very honored with that. Once again, please follow our website for new events. We're very keen on the issue of China and Latin America, as you can see, is very important to us. But it's been a great pleasure to have the opportunity for both me and I'm pretty sure for you as well to welcome you both ministers, Luis Alberto Arce and René Orellana. Thank you very much for visiting. We're most grateful that you could find the time to visit us, and I would like to thank you with a big applause and welcome.